Welcome to the Rise Podcast. I'm Rachel Hollis, and I've built a multi-million dollar media company with a high school diploma and a Google search bar. Each week, we'll be sharing tangible, direct advice or inspiring interviews with the same intention. These are the tools to change your life. All right, sister. I am so excited to have you on the podcast today. I have had the distinct pleasure to get to have dinner with you before, and I feel like this is a chance for the audience to get some of that awesome wisdom girl time that I got to have. So if they have never heard of you, which seems impossible, but if that were true, can you please tell our listeners who you are, what you do, and how you got there?
Yes, absolutely. Well, thanks, Rachel, for having me on. I know it's so fun to be able to work together and do this, so I appreciate it. So I am Rachel Cruz, and I'm a financial expert in the personal finance space. And I travel and write and speak and have a YouTube show and do content all around personal finance, specifically helping people gain control of their money, everything from budgeting and getting out of debt to even talking about insurance and investing and taxes, like get very, very tactical, but also the high level of really helping people gain control of this part of their life that usually is a very stressful point for people, which is their money. And I love really setting that foundation and that table for people and giving them a plan. And I grew up as Dave Ramsey's daughter. So that was kind of my intro into...
That was going to be the question. I was like, and how do you know this information?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
That's important.
Yes. It's funny though, because people just assume growing up as Dave Ramsey's kid that we had like mutual fund parties, like camps in the summer and like all this stuff. And really growing up, mom and dad were very normal when it comes to parenting in that sense. But they did teach us how money works. And so I really grew up with this philosophy, kind of this financial bubble of learning that, you know, debt is like a four-letter word. Like you just never borrow money. You always save up and pay for things. As kids, for instance, we were never given an allowance. We were always on commission. So you work, you get paid. You don't work, you don't get paid. And so really like this is like the environment I grew up in. And so when I graduated from high school and went off to college is when I realized that not everyone had these tools in their tool belt, if you will, when it comes to money, because all my peers were getting into student loan debt and they don't even know how to budget. They were getting into credit card debt and all of this at 18, 19 years old. And that's really when I realized the need for this message. And so when I graduated from college is when I decided, okay, this is what I want to do with my life. And so my message started out really for high school students and college students. And now it's gravitated, I guess, followed me, if you will, through my seasons of life. Now that I'm married, I have two kids and I'm a working mom. And so a lot of my content is around that as well. So it's been really a crazy journey over I've done it for about 9 years now full time. And it's just been a dream. I mean, it's so fun. I love it.
So what if someone's listening to this and I feel like I would have been this person like, yeah, that's a good idea and all, but I don't have any money but I'm deeply in debt. Or like if you're vaguely unsure about how to even get started, what is the advice that you give to people?
The number one thing you must do, and it's the number one mistake people make, is that they're just not intentional with their money. Because a lot of people that answer in that kind of, you know, tone or that perspective, a lot of people have no idea where their money goes. They don't know how much debt they have. Some people don't even know really how much they make after taxes. I mean, they just don't know the state of their finances. And so it's really hard to be purposeful with your money when you're living. It's almost a sense of denial, right? You're like you're just not engaging in this. Because either you're fearful or you're apathetic, whatever the reason is. And so the budget is the number one key of getting on track. And that is doing it every month, listing out all of your expenses. And the goal would be for your income before the month begins. So you're looking at the next month and say, hey, this is what I'm going to make in the following month. And if you're on commission or your income fluctuates, you kind of have to have a guesstimate. It's kind of like, okay, this is what I think we're going to make. And then you can make changes throughout the month if that number is off. But you take that income for the month minus all of your expenses and you get it to equal zero. So every dollar is assigned to a category. And that's kind of your springboard of starting off, because what that's going to do is reveal a lot of your spending habits, where you're spending money. If you're not saving money or giving money, you're going to see that. And so it's really getting in control. And so once you do that for a few months, it may be a rough few months if you've never done that before, but after doing it for about 3 months, you're going to start to gain control. And then that's really where your eyes are opened. You're like, wow, okay. And then you figure out, okay, how much debt do I have? How can I start paying this off? And really getting to the place where you are not only debt free, but you have savings and all of that. So we have a whole, you know, we call it the baby steps around Ramsey Solutions. So it's from some of our core content. You can find all of that on rachelcruz.com or daveramsey.com.
I love this idea, like starting with what you said at the beginning of the first step is getting out of denial, because I think 100% in my family, we were not raised. I was not a Ramsey child. We were not raised to be conscious of money at all.
And, which you're normal, and by the way.
Yes.
That's very normal. Like, yeah.
Yes. And probably because it was something we struggled so much financially that it was sort of this, like, let's not look over there and then we don't have to see how bad it is. And I think I definitely walked into marriage, like, thank God I'm married to someone who is very fiscally responsible, because I was just like, wow, I don't know. Do I have enough? Let's hand the credit card to the guy at Target and hope that I've got enough to cover these throw pillows.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So I love the idea of getting honest with yourself, because you're never going to get to the place you want to be if you can't start there.
Yeah. And I would say too, Rachel, that, you know, your personality actually is a lot like mine. Like, I am a free spirit. I am a spender naturally. Like, you're either naturally a saver or spender, and I'm a spender. I'm not great at details. And so, like, what you just described, I'm like, that literally would have been me, you know, if I hadn't had these like foundational principles growing up. But just some encouragement, if that is you, if you relate to Rachel and myself in that way, they're like, no, I'm a spender. I love to spend money. I love to live in the moment. You can still learn these tools and still be who you are. Like, I still will always enjoy spending money. I've learned how to save it and I've made that a habit in my life, but I still get this thrill of going to Target and being like, okay, but I know what I can spend, right? In the budget, it's like I have categories and I'm like, okay, I'm spending in control, but I still love to. I mean, I literally was just on, I think, bananarepublic.com right before we got on, and I'm like, buying my husband clothes because he doesn't like to shop, and I love it. And I'm like, it's so fun. So you can still enjoy life, but be in control of your money at the same time.
What I find so interesting about money is I have owned my company for, gosh, over a decade. Mm. And I actually am doing copy edits on the new book right now, so this is fresh in my mind. But I talk about the idea of having this limiting belief that I'm bad at math and therefore bad at money. And I hate to admit it because this is embarrassing, but for years and years as a business owner, and I say this because so many women who listen to this podcast own their own businesses, for years in that space, I didn't really know the finances of my company at all. Like, my attitude was, do we have enough to cover payroll? Do we have enough to pay our bills? Great. Then we're doing good. Are the clients paying on time? Awesome.
Yep.
I couldn't ever truly scale, and I couldn't ever cut expenses because I was too afraid to dig in to what the financials were. And I was too afraid to do it because I didn't understand it.
Mm.
And I think a lot of women are in that place, either with personal finances or business finances. They know that they don't know, and so they're too afraid to even try.
Yep.
And the crazy thing is, what would actually give you more confidence is just to admit that you don't know and to dig into the how. How do I learn this? What book can I read? What podcast can I listen to? But you're so caught up in the fear of what's going to happen for not knowing that you don't just like live into that space.
Yeah,
for me, it was like, if I admit that I don't understand a balance sheet, that I don't know the difference between a balance sheet and a P&L, then I shouldn't be allowed to run this company. So I had a lot of shame around that. Do you find that people have a lot of shame around personal finances as well?
Oh, absolutely. Because not only is it an intimidating part of your life, just what you're explaining, right? I mean, the business side, there's taxes and P&Ls and right, all of that, which is intimidating. But on the personal finance side, there's elements of that that people don't even want to get near because they don't understand and they don't want to ask questions because they don't want to look dumb. And what's so interesting about personal finance, which is very common even with your business finances, but it is so much about your behavior. And it's really not a lot about head knowledge, because to really succeed in your personal finances, you don't need to know a ton. Like, you really don't. Like, all of us know if we don't have the money, we probably shouldn't buy it. Like, we probably should be saving, right? Like, these are basic, common principles that are so easy to understand, but it is so hard to do. And so what happens is we stick in this, and we keep doing the same mistakes over and over again because we don't want to change, because the change is uncomfortable. And to say, okay, I'm going to make a change and I'm going to try to live on a budget, because a budget, really, when you look at it, it's fifth grade math. I mean, it's income minus expenses equals zero. And so the math of it is not that difficult, but doing it and actually putting it on paper and seeing it, that's the scary part. It's the behavior that is so hard to change. But once you change it and you get over that uncomfortable feeling, it's amazing the progress and how quickly you will see progress because you actually decided to care. And I think a lot of people that are in denial when it comes to their money, a lot of my encouragement is usually your situation's probably, I say, not as bad as you think it is. The unknown is what is scary. It's all these numbers in your head, this fear of not wanting to open up the bills or log into your bank account. That fear is usually most of the time greater than your reality. And once you get it and see it and take the scary monster, you know, like open the closet door and really, you know, look at the monster in the face and say, okay, I'm going to do this. You come out of that usually saying, okay, now it feels possible. What seemed impossible now feels so doable, because again, you put things out there and you actually are living in your reality instead of this make-believe world.
So how much do you think that the community that we find ourselves in, or the friends that we have, especially I think when we're younger, how much do their attitudes towards money affect how we spend our money?
Oh, I think astronomically. I mean, who you hang around with, I really believe is who you become, because you start picking up on habits. And if your friends don't care about money, right, and they don't care to know, oh, I'm going deeply in debt, I'm just wanting to go on this great vacation, I just want to go out to eat all the time, oh, don't worry about it. That lifestyle is going to make you, if you're in contrast of that, say, okay, I have to say no to myself because I don't have the money to do those things. And you start comparing your life and your lifestyle to others when your principles and your values are not lining up. And that's not to say that, you know, I don't have friends that, you know, I have a lot of friends that do money very differently. But it would be very, very difficult to win financially and really, again, stick to a budget, start sacrificing your lifestyle to get out of debt and do these things when your friends don't really care as much. And I find about 2 out of 3 women I talk to, majority of their friends don't think that debt is a big deal, and they don't want a budget because that doesn't sound fun. That sounds restricting, and they want to live in the moment. And so a lot of people that I talk to, their friends and even family don't get it. So I would say at least find a person, either hopefully if you're married, it's your spouse or a good girlfriend or someone that is good with money and has your value system to talk to. Because again, it's going to be really hard if you're isolated to do these things when your friends are doing the opposite, if you will. And I wish I knew the quote, Rachel, or I wish I knew the stat off the top of my head, and I don't. But there was a recent study done by millionaires, and they talk about that millionaires show that their friends are within like 20% of their income level or something like that. And it's, wow. And it's because, not because just rich people hang out with rich people, but they want to be around people that work, you know, work hard, or they're entrepreneurial. They do things that make that they win in life, if you will. And that's mm-hmm. who they're attracted to. And that's who they end up being friends with. And that's the people they choose to spend time with, because we know our time is so limited. And if you're running your business and you have a husband and you have kids and it's like all this stuff is going on, your time is limited and you have to be very selective of who you hang out with. And so you start to see your value system lining up with other people's value system. And that's when you, I think, connect and have even a better friendship.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's funny. The first time that I got to meet you, I was having dinner with you and Christy Wright.
Yes.
And the check came at the end of the night. And I think the three of us split it. And I remember, I'm so embarrassed still, but like, you put down a debit card, oh, no, and Chrissy put down a debit card, and I put down a credit card. And I was like, oh my God, this is so mortifying, because I knew, I was like, oh, look at them, like, walking the walk and talking the talk, and I'm over here giving my MasterCard.
Zero judgment, Rachel. Zero judgment.
No, you got, not at all. But I was like, oh my gosh. But there's so many things. I really am not just saying this. I think you know what, like a super nerd, how much I love your dad. Like what I have learned in business from Entree Leadership and all of the conferences. Like I'm such a big fan. But being immersed in the culture of Ramsey is what made me start to question, like, just even being on credit cards, because we are an interesting like way of thinking, which you guys were like, you're so dumb, because I told you that.
No.
But we have always lived on credit cards, always, and we pay them off in full at the end of every month. Like that's just always how we've done things. And I remember saying that to you, and I was like, because we have really good credit. And you were like, but why do you need credit if you have money? Like it never really would never occur to me to pay for something with a debit card. But the idea, no, it wouldn't. And I need to, I'm like, oh yes, but I am, hey, this is you guys too. You're going to laugh at me. But we bought our office when we moved to Texas in cash, which we have never done before. And that is the influence of you guys. 100%. Like we are not supposed to be in debt. Like Rachel would not want this for our lives. But really it is who you are surrounding yourself with. And I just want to encourage those of you who are listening, like, I get it. Not everyone gets to go to dinner with a Ramsey, but I follow all of y'all on social media. And I feel like that's a great, like, if you follow, I'm pretty sure it's at Dave Ramsey, but they basically all it is people who are getting out of debt.
Oh, yes.
And so they'll be like,
yeah, that's so great. Yeah.
Yes, it's so inspiring. So it'll be like, I paid off $38,000 in student loans in a year.
Yeah.
Or I paid off we own our house and our car. It's just like these people who are celebrating getting out of debt. And I don't even have student loans. And I'm just like, that's so beautiful. Good for you, Jim. So if you can't hang out with people who are like this, I really encourage you to consume it in your media.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Because again, and I think our social media accounts, I think that's a great point, how much that influences so much of your way of thinking and your expectation of life. Like I had to stop following a bunch of fashion bloggers because my whole Instagram feed were all these like beautiful women with these amazing clothes. And I started to be so, you know, start to seep in this discontentment and this whole idea of, oh, if I could just have that, I'd be happy. And that kind of the spiral. And after looking at these things over and over again, I'm like, what am I doing? Like, I know in my head the truth. And I know that this is so silly. And I'm like, you know what? It's not worth me sitting there scrolling and seeing this day in and day out. So I did. I unfollowed a bunch of them. Not because I'm mad at fashion bloggers by any means. I still follow a few. But I'm like, this is all I'm looking at in my spare time. And I'm like, you know what? It's just not worth it. And so being careful, again, even on social media, who you're following, because it's so easy to compare your life to other people's highlight reel. And the best parts of their life are being shown in the most best perfect way. And I'm like, you know, it makes your life feel so insignificant and not cool, really, when it comes down to it. And so I'm always like, okay, Rachel, be prepared as I open up Instagram, even if just like, you have to remember the reality of what's going on.
All right, we're going to take a quick break to tell you a little bit about something that we have been working on at the Hollis Co. So take a listen. Start Today Journals. That's right. Our daily practice of gratitude and goal setting wrapped in a beautiful design, small batch. It's out for the second wave. But we're already sold out of two of the three covers. There's just a single one left. And I can tell you as a person who's using it on an everyday basis, it is a massive difference maker in grounding myself in gratitude and setting me up to chase a big goal every day. Check it out at theholisco.com.
I am super curious about what it feels like to have built a family business at the level that you guys have built it. Like, what age were you when the company was started? Because were you born yet, or is it so old that it was before your time?
No, it was right after I was born. So mom and dad filed bankruptcy actually the year I was born. So dad was doing real estate, and then I was born in April, and they filed bankruptcy in September of that year. And so out of that whole part of their story, Dad really dug into what the Bible has to say about money, what common sense has to say about money, because he was like, I have all these financial degrees after my name and I filed for bankruptcy. Like, what is going on? And so really getting to the heart of what makes you win financially. And it's everything we talked about, right? These basic common sense principles, but putting them into practice is what's difficult. And so he started teaching on these things, I think like at a Sunday school, like at our church. Like, I mean, it was like super like, you know, basic level, super low key. And then slowly but surely, there was a radio station in Nashville that was actually in bankruptcy, which is funny. And so they had like a few free hours and he was like, well, I'll get on and, you know, talk about money. And then kind of from there, like wrote a book. And so it was a very, very gradual process, if you will. And so all of that, I mean, I was, you know, 2-3 years old when a bunch of that started happening with the radio and all of that. And so I did grow up with like our shipping department was in our living room for a few years. And like my sister and I would stuff envelopes and stuff books and envelopes and help ship things out, put the labels on the front of packages and all of that. And then as it grew, we were very much still a part of it. I mean, like we would travel to events on the weekends and work the back book tables. I remember I was 14 and my sister was 16 and dad set us down after school one day and he was like, okay, girls, you'll appreciate this, Rachel. But he was like, I want you girls to open up your own business and you can do it together. You can do it separately, but I want you to learn how to run a business. And I want you to learn a basic P&L sheet. I want you to learn expenses. I want you to figure out something you can do. And we like looked at each other. We're like, wait, what? Are you serious? Like, dad, no, this is so stupid. Like, you know, and he was like, no, I really want you to do this for a little bit. And so Denise and I, my sister, we opened up a snack business at the office. So there were like four different kitchens in the office building at the time. And so we competed with the vending machine prices and like did the whole idea.
That's so
and
good.
We called it Your Integrity Snacks because we had to like take it and pay for it. And so, yeah, so we did that around the office. That lasted probably about 12 to 18 months. It felt like 5 years for us, but it was
That's so funny.
So doing that. And then I started speaking with dad when I was 15 years old. So I would travel with him and get on stage and pitch our kids' products because we have a whole kids' line about how to teach kids about money. And so I would, you know, get up and do this like little 10-minute bit and sell those kids' products. And then I'd get a cut of whatever sold, whatever I sold on the back book table. So I did that through high school. So I was speaking and really immersed myself kind of in that life through the end of high school there. And then in college, I kind of unplugged and I was like, I just want to be in college and enjoy it, which was totally great. Mom and dad had zero expectations of us being in the family business. It was really, what do we choose to do? And what do we feel called to? What are we excited about? And so after college, again, my story goes from there. I think I already said it earlier, but started, doing all this full time. So yeah, so all that to say, long answer, but from the very beginning, we were a part of it. And again, I do want to stress to people that hear it, because if you have a business that's running and you have kids, number one, I think it is such an amazing environment to grow up when your parents are entrepreneurs and you get to watch them make decisions and talk to your kids about it and like really show them the way. But then once they get old enough, let them make the decision. Do they choose to continue on in it or do they want to do their own thing? Because the most miserable, in my head, the most miserable thing would be in the world to be part of a family business when you're not happy, when you're not living in your gifts and your passions and you're like, well, my dad was doing this, so I felt like I had to. No. It has to be your decision to do that, because that's, we've studied a lot of family businesses and the ones that succeed and transition on are the ones that people are in their sweet spot doing what they love.
So often women, especially who are building small businesses or they have an Etsy shop or they're doing direct sales or whatever it is, have a lot of guilt and shame about wanting to have a business. Like they feel like I should only want to be a mom. Like they struggle to but if I have to take a little time away from the kids in order to, you know, have a direct sales party or whatever it is, they have a lot of shame wrapped up in it. And I love that especially my two older boys who are 11 and 10 at the end of the month, have watched like me work my butt off. And now a decade in, they're getting to see the fruit of that labor. It's so special. Like I know that owning this business means that I didn't have the time that a stay-at-home mom gets. Like, I understand that I made that trade-off, but the beautiful thing is that my boys do not know a world where a woman cannot build and run a successful media company. They do not know a world where, like, in their minds, like, oh, you just work really hard. You work really, really hard. And then you can have something special for yourself. And I love, y'all have that line that everybody says, like, I'm going to live in a way. Tell me your line about.
Oh yeah. Live like no one else. So later you can live and give like no one else.
I love that. So yeah, I just want to encourage anyone who's in that space today where you're struggling with, this business takes me away from my children, but what is the awesome things that they're going to get out of it? Or what are the values that they're going to learn by watching you build something? So
that's right. And I'd say too, kids are resilient.
Yes.
Like they are, it's amazing what your pressure and what you think in your head and putting that on your kids when they may not even feel that. Like I even remember growing up, Dad traveled a ton. I mean, at night he was teaching Financial Peace University, our 9-week course, in person, live, like 3 nights a week. I mean, all of that. And I look back on my childhood. I'm like, do you know what I remember? I remember going on dates with my dad, and he would pick us up and I'd get to dress up in a little dress and he'd bring me flowers and we would do that. And in my head, it was like all the time. Yeah. We always did that. And he's like, I think I did that 4 times. Aww. You know, he was at every middle school basketball game that I cheered at. Like he, you know, he did pick the important things in life. And really, and that's what I remember. I don't have this scarring idea. Oh, I only saw my mom. I never saw my dad. No. Like it's, in my mind, again, you're there for the important things if you're able to be, and you're present when you are there and you're not on your phone, you're not on social media, you're not checking email. When you're with your kids, you're with your kids. And then when you're at work and you work hard and your kids are going to see that. So male, you know, dad or mom in that case, I would say your kids are resilient for sure.
Good job. I love that. That's good wisdom. That's good wisdom to hear, because I feel like that it really is about the intentionality and the quality time.
Yes.
That you have those memories of such cool things, and it's not that it was every day, but it's that when it happened, it was really intentional. How has your business, how has your work changed as you have become a mom?
It's, I'd say definitely it's changed in the sense that I've pulled back on travel. So I traveled a ton before kids. So anytime there was a speaking engagement, I mean, I just did it. And even in the early days, I did so many things for free. And I was like, just if anyone wanted me, I was there, and really made those sacrifices early on, which I'm so thankful I did. Because now that I have the girls, I'm able to pick and choose what I do more so. And because of that, I cut my travel basically in half just in these early years. And when I'm pregnant and all of that, it's just miserable to travel. Absolutely. Anyways and be on an airplane and all of that. So that part is what's shifted, I would say, the most. But then at the same time, I think my work's exploded even more since my girls have been here. I mean, I've had 2 books out since them. I started the Rachel Cruze show on YouTube. And I mean, like, if anything, it's exploded on that end, which is so cool. And so, yeah. And I think everyone's life looks different, right? I mean, you kind of have to pick and choose. And so for me, it's that. But again, and the important things is what I try to be at. And so I've kind of decided all of Amelia, my 3-year-old, all of her firsts, I really want to be at. So like her first day of preschool, I want to be there. She had her first day of ballet. She's never taken ballet. So I put her in ballet because I've always wanted to be a ballerina. And so I'm like, I live vicariously with my 3-year-old, just for a few years. And so I wanted to be there for that. So I was there for that. And so, you know what I mean? Like there's definitely the things that I've chosen to be priorities, but in 2 months, ballet is going to be every Monday and I won't be there.
Yeah.
Like someone else is going to be taking her. And so that's okay. And she's okay with that. She's going to be okay. So I would say it's shifted, I think, priorities with travel the most. That's the most that's changed for me, of pulling that back some.
Let me ask this too, because it's something that keeps coming up at, in when I'm speaking or traveling, or people are asking questions in email. And so I really want to be intentional anytime that I have the opportunity to speak to another mom who is working at the level you are working, is talk to me about how you ask for help. Because so many women are like, Rachel, how do you do it? And I'm like, or how do you do it by, how do you do it all? And I'm like, I don't. I have a nanny. I have a really involved husband. I have an assistant. And I know that people, you know, there are meanies on the internet who freak out when you say that because they're like, yeah. Oh, you don't love your children. I'm like, no, get out of here, Pam. Nobody's talking to you. Yes, get out of it. But I do think that so many women in media, like who our listeners have heard from most are like actresses and singers. And there is this like wall of like, well, if you're just really organized, well, if you're, and I'm like, you know what, get out of here. We know you have three nannies. It feels right. Like people are not talking enough about asking for help. And so women at home who are struggling don't know that they should. So what did that look like in your life?
So I remember talking to Christine Kane. I don't know if you know who she is, but totally, she came out of the Hillsong Church in Australia. She is like amazing. She's like my mentor of like who does this on steroids and has two girls too. So I'm like, I'm always like, Christine, what are you doing? How do you do it? And I remember her telling me, she was unashamed. She said, I outsource what can be outsourced.
So good.
And so everything from like, someone does laundry. Someone, even for her, she hates cooking. So her thing is like, I pick up dinner or I have someone cook a meal. Like I don't do cooking because it's not my thing. And so things that can be outsourced, outsource them if you're able to, if you're in the financial space or, you know, wherever you are in your story and in your life, if whatever you're able to outsource, outsource. You can't outsource hugs. Yeah. You can't outsource, you know, certain things. I mean, there's certain things that as a mom, you're always going to be a mom. And those are things that you want to be a part of your kid's life and talking to them and being in their world and knowing them really, really well. And those are things you can't necessarily outsource. And so, but the things you can, oh, outsource it. And so that's what I've learned to do. And honestly, I was a little bit like, no, I get embarrassed. I don't know what the word would be, but like when friends would be like, oh, I hate doing laundry. And I'm like, oh, God, don't ask me if I hate doing laundry.
Yeah, totally.
And I don't. And yeah. I'm like, you know what? I'm okay with that. I grew up with a mom and she did everything. And that's not my story. That's not going to be my life. And so things that grocery shopping, our nanny goes grocery shopping. So when I come home, I'm not grocery shopping. I am with my girls. And if I have a house cleaner, I'm just going to give you all my.
No, I do too. I've said it to them. They know I have a full-time nanny. I have a full-time housekeeper.
And what's so funny, Rachel, I had the housekeeper, but I was like, you know, I had someone deep clean the house and I just did it once a month because there was still a little bit of that guilt in me where I was like, if it's more than once a month, that feels over the top and that feels like I should be doing. And just 2 weeks ago, my husband was like, babe, can we do it like every other week? Like, it's just such a huge gift when we come home and the house is like spotless. So I was like, yes, we can do that. Yeah. But it was kind of a weird hurdle for me emotionally to be like, okay, every other week, I'm going to do that. And I'm like, that's so stupid. Why is it a hurdle for me? No, Rachel, like embrace that because I don't want to be vacuuming and cleaning my baseboards on a Saturday when I could be with my girls and we can go to the park. And so, yeah, so that's my thing. Outsource what you can outsource. And that, and I'm great with that. And when I had my second baby, a lot of people said too, like, ask for help. And I remember thinking, okay, I will. And I did so much more with Carrot when I had Caroline versus my first one, Amelia. And I don't want to say better memories with my second as a newborn, but I have such a more relaxing memory of not only knowing what you're doing, you're not a new mom anymore, but still I'm like, in a sense, some people call it lazy, but I'm like, I remember laying in bed for 2 full days and just holding that baby on me, you know, on me. And I was like, I'm going to just sit here because this is okay. And I can sit here, which is hard for me to do,
me too.
But I was like, I'm going to do it. And so all that to say, yeah, outsource what you can outsource and be in the moment with those kids when you have those moments for sure.
And I would say two things for this is to remember that, it's not necessarily even a financial thing. So if you are looking for 2 hours a week for yourself to just go literally do anything so that you can have a break for your stay-at-home mom, you just need 2 hours, trade with another mom. Hey, I'll give you 2 hours on Thursday if you give me 2 hours on Tuesday. Like there are ways, if you get creative with how you are asking for the help, that it will not cost you money. I also think when we were earlier in our marriage, we were like, we really wanted a housekeeper and we could only afford the deep clean once a month, just exactly like you're talking about. And we gave up dinners out so that we could afford that, because that was more important to us than getting to go to like Black Angus. We That's really right. wanted to be able to just have someone scrub our toilets.
That's right.
Whenever I'm speaking and I talk about this, I say, like, I have a full-time nanny and I have a full-time housekeeper, and I know for a fact that there are women in this room who just thought in their head, must be nice. And everybody laughs because half the room thought that. And I'm like, but y'all, how in the world do you think that I could produce at this level by myself? I can't. And if I keep that truth from you, if you think that I'm somehow running this company and traveling this much and writing these books and raising four kids and keeping my house clean and feeding them great meals, like, if you think that, then it's going to stop you from even trying, because you're going to be like, well, I can't do anything. Rachel's over there running the world all by herself. No, man, we ask for help. Yes, and I will budget away other things so fast in order to be able to afford the help, because we don't have family by us. There isn't an option. Like, if for as long as we've had kids, we don't have any family around. So if we didn't pay for childcare, we wouldn't have childcare.
That's right.
So if you can get it and you're not accepting the help, but you, sister, come on, stop being a martyr. Ask for help.
That's right.
Yep.
Oh, yes. And you know what? And I find people want to help. Right.
Totally.
And so, like, if you have a good community of people, and just like the mom trade-off, I love that. And I tell moms to do that too. There's other moms out there that are like, yes, please. Your kids will entertain my kids upstairs, you know, at least at a certain age. And then you can have some time away, and then I get to do the same. Like people want to be able to help you as well. And so that's a big thing to remember. It takes a village, and yeah, it's good to be unashamed of that. That's good, Rachel. That spoke to me. I appreciate that.
There's literally chapter in the new book called Ask for Help. I say this in there. I was watching the Today Show a few years ago, and there was a very big celebrity who was releasing a very big line of products. And she also has a celebrity husband. Like, they're super famous. They have kids. And they asked her, oh man, busy mom, you have all these products, you have all of these businesses, how do you do it? She smiled and said, I'm just super organized. And I wanted to bash my head against the wall, because I know that that is untrue. I know that at the level that they are operating at, they have massive help. But the mom in Ohio, she doesn't know that. And so she just saw this woman say that, and now she's thinking that she's just not smart enough, just not organized enough, just not, that she doesn't try hard enough. Now she feels depleted because you weren't honest.
That's right. I'm like,
man, I will be the one. I will raise my hand and say, girl, I get all the help that I can, and you should too.
And so good.
It's so important too, because I think, like, what matters is, how are your kids doing? How are they doing?
Yep.
Because all of these women are beating themselves up because they don't think they're doing things, quote, the right way. When the reality is, like, but are your kids, they're doing pretty good. They're genuinely good people. I know they have jerky days, but they're genuinely good people. You know, you love each other. Everyone, you know, everyone's doing good. Look at the evidence of your good work, and stop beating yourself up because it didn't look like that person's Instagram feed.
That's right. That's right. And I think too, and my kids are still a little young for this. My 3-year-old, I'm just now starting to like tap in a little bit more, but it's amazing when you know your kids on a deep emotional level, that's gonna be a lot of your saving grace. Because if you are a working parent, but you don't talk to your kids, you don't know them, then that could be the more wounding, right? Than even having a working mom, like having 100%. A mom that it doesn't know you. And so being able to sit with your kids, and my parents, I'm thankful because they were a lot like this. And my husband grew up with similar parents too, that you're just engaged in how they are and trying. And again, schedules are going to look different depending on the season, but having dinners together, like as many times as we can sit down as a family, like we try to do it 2 to 3 times a week and just sit together. Cause it's amazing when you just ask a question, listen to them, know their friends, be in the part of their worlds that are important and influence them. And you're going to have a pulse on how they're doing. And so and again, not to put judgment on other moms, but like the thing that scares me, I even think about like in middle school and high school, when the kids just go up to the room, shut the door, and you know nothing about them. You don't know what they're doing. You don't know their friends. You don't know how they are. That's the scary place for me as a mom. I'm like, I always want to be in tune emotionally, because that means when I leave for 3 nights and travel and I come back, they're not all scarred and freaked out. No, they know that a mom, I love them and I know them. And so I think that that's a huge part of parenting that, again, we're just kind of tapping into, but something that we've made a priority. We've always said from the beginning, we want to know our kids on a deep level.
I love that. And I honestly, I feel like the is Amelia, is she three?
Yes, she's three. So there's not a ton to
three. No, no. But even just setting that intention right now, absolutely. Yeah. Yep. Because I think it's knowing your kids, but it's knowing them as individuals.
That's right.
Because every one of our kids is so different and they need to be loved in different ways and they need to be disciplined in different ways. And it's so important to have that relationship. And I want to encourage too, like when my kids were very little, I really struggled as a mom because I was like, this is terrible. I've said it before, but I'm like, this is not fun for me. They're toddlers and I don't like it. And it's not, and I had so much shame. I thought I was the worst mom ever because I didn't like toddler stage. And now I have, my oldest is 11 and I love it. Love it so much because I like having a conversation. I want to talk to you about what you're doing. They go on business trips with me. We have so much fun. And so I just want to encourage those of you who are in a season where you're like, I'm pretty sure I'm a horrible mom because I do not like this 2-year-old. No, your 2-year-old is a jerk.
Yes.
They are a jerk. It is not your fault. And it does get better.
So good. So good.
At this point, I feel like we've covered every topic anyone could ever need.
Yeah, I know, right? Everyone, go live your perfect life now.
We got you. Hey, girl, thank you so much for taking the time and sharing your wisdom and your grace and your friendship with me and with the audience. I know that there are people who are listening who are going to think differently about what they're doing with their finances and how they're speaking to themselves and how they're taking control and being intentional. So I just really want to acknowledge you for that. And thank you so much for spending the time with us.
Well, thank you, Rachel. Thanks for having me on. Always so fun. So fun to talk to you.
Hey, y'all, we should hang out on more than just this podcast, which means that the next time you're on Instagram or Facebook or YouTube, be sure and type Rachel Hollis into the search bar and check out all the fun things we have going on your favorite platform.